Welcome back to Condo Craze and HOAs here on 850 WFTL. I'm Karen Curtis, and I'm here again today, as we are each Sunday at noon, with attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro from Glazer & Associates PA, a law firm practicing community association law throughout Florida. As our listeners know, we're here each week to answer all of your calls and emails about the issues that make life in your condominium or HOA absolutely crazy from one minute to the next. As always, we would love to get the phone lines going early, answering all of your questions. So give us a call right here in our studio, 877-850-8585. Again, that's 877-850-8585. Or if you prefer to email us your questions, you can do so by visiting the show's website at condocrazeandhoas.com and by clicking on the Email the Show tab.
And, of course, even if you don't want to send us an email, you should still visit the show's website at condocrazeandhoas.com, where you can listen to all of our past shows, you can sign up for our free seminars, you can see who the show's sponsors are, visit all of their websites, you can link to our Facebook page, and you can link to our brand new HOA and condo blog. And again, to check out that new blog, please go to www.hoa-condoblog.com. And this week's topic was all about the need for friendly condo and HOA legislation. You can also join our email list and get copies of our newsletters and other announcements week in and week out about the show. And, of course, if you'd like to call our law firm directly and pick our brains off the air, you can call Glazer & Associates at 855-4-CONDO-CRAZE. Again, 855-4-CONDO-CRAZE. And you can visit the law firm's website at condo-laws.com. Again, that's condo-laws.com. All right, some housekeeping matters. Again, remember, Florida law now provides members of a condo board. You have to get certified within 90 days of getting elected to the board, or you are suspended. And in fact, you can even get elected within 1 year of running for the board. And one way of getting certified is by taking the Condo Craze Board Member Certification Course. Again, this was the first course that was written by an attorney and that was approved by the Florida DBPR.
Woohoo! And Eric has now certified over 2,500 Floridians who are now eligible to serve on a Florida condominium board of directors. Why not come see what all the fuss is about?
Yeah, and if you got a whole lot of people on your board and it's hard to get down to Hollywood or up to Jacksonville or wherever Eric's doing one of these shindigs, you can actually call us at the office and you can set up a private one to happen at our office and Eric will teach it to you there. Or Eric will come out to your condo if you got enough people and he'll put on a show for you, all you fine folks.
Yeah, again, just give us a call in the office, 855-4-CONDO-CRAZE. And if you'd like to actually register for the next seminar, it's in Orlando at the PM Expo event. Its date is slowly but surely creeping up on us. It's August 15th. So, again, August 15th, PM Expo in Orlando. Just go to the show's website, again, condocrazeandhoas.com, and fill out the form.
Well, last show we had a great guest on the show, Randy Johnson, who is a Republican running for District 55 in Florida's House of Representatives. And Randy no doubt created a stir within his own party when he publicly supported expansion of the DBPR to homeowner associations, HMOs, mandatory certification for HOAs, board members, and greater financial responsibility of the banking industry to Florida Community Association.
Yeah, as I wrote in the blog this week, Karen, it's few and far between when I actually feel a little excited about a political candidate these days. But Randy Johnson certainly seems to be a guy who, despite being labeled as an ultra-conservative, understands that by protecting community associations, you are, in fact, protecting Florida's families. And again, anyone interested in learning more about Randy, please go to www.electrandyjohnson.com. And while we're on the topic of political officials, let's talk about a new study that ranks Florida number one in government corruption.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Number one, baby.
Number one. Like the heat, I guess, Scott, right?
That's right.
There, I said it. All right, if you can believe these numbers, Florida had 781 federal corruption convictions from the year 2000 to 2010, the most of any state by far, I understand.
Well, you know, some of those states might be a little bit more corrupt. They just don't throw them in jail because the judiciary is corrupt, too. Well, in fact, in five of the last 12 years, Florida led all states in at least one category. It had the most criminal convictions among people involved in government.
And forget about the argument that Florida's large population makes up for these numbers. California and Texas each have larger populations than Florida does, and they have less criminal corruption convictions.
Yeah, here's what's funny,
yeah,
though,
take
about
that,
these numbers.
Texas.
Yeah, right. Here's what's funny, though. Apparently, when the Florida Ethics Commission was asked to kind of explain these numbers and why it's happening in Florida, the executive director said he was really incapable of interpreting the meaning of these numbers. You know, what in the world does that mean? Why is it so hard for the ethics director to say something like, well, I guess we got a lot of public officials that are corrupt here in Florida. You know, how can those numbers really mean anything other than that? I mean, just in the past on this show, how many times have we spoken about corrupt building officials getting arrested, mayors of cities getting arrested, police officers, county commissioners, school board members? And the list really goes on and on. I remember at one time we were competing, who do you think's winning, Dade Broward or Palm Beach? It's kind of a toss-up.
Right. But the question is, why is corruption so prevalent in Florida? What is the cause?
Well, and as they say, follow the money, Karen. Over the past decade, like tens of billions of dollars were pumped into South Florida in order to build what? Right? You guessed it. More and more condos. And where has much of the corruption come from? Commissioners who took bribes in exchange for favorable votes on condo and HOA projects. Developers who paid these bribes, right? Inspectors who turned their head on faulty constructions for the condos and HOAs and took bribes from the developers. And so on and so on and so on. So, yes, directly or indirectly, the condo market and the building boom all had a major effect on the corruption that actually has occurred over the last few years in Florida. On that note, why don't we take Bob from Palm Beach? How are you, Bob?
Bob, you're on the air.
Fine, and thanks for all the work you guys do for us.
Thank you.
I've got a question about material alteration.
Yes.
We've gotten divided opinions. Our documents indicate that you need only a majority vote for material alteration if it's less than 10% of the budget. Some people say that the law trumps that and that the law dictates you need, the Florida Condo Act, that is, dictates that you need 75%. And someone else says that as long as our documents say it's a majority, it's a majority.
Yeah.
I guess the question is...
Yeah, go ahead, Bob. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Yeah,
I guess the question is whether the Act actually says that. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm going to look up the Act while I talk to you, but it's my understanding that you go by what it says in your governing documents. And if the if your documents are basically silent on the issue, then a 75% vote would actually be necessary. But if your documents allow to do it, allow a material alteration with a majority vote, then you're okay. That's how it goes. You got to look at your governing documents.
Okay, very good.
Okay?
Thanks very much.
All right, thank you. All right.
All right.
Good call. That's an interesting question because we deal with that topic all the time. Again, taking your calls, 877-850-8585, 877-850-8585. All right, you know how Lori Parrish and Randy Johnson took some shots at the banks for not taking care of properties that they foreclose on and then they wound up owning? Well, once they do start taking care of properties, Scott's going to tell us why we all may want to go into the lawn maintenance business. Sounds like a good profession, actually, at this point.
Better than working for you.
Yeah, that's for sure, right?
Well, that's right, Eric. According to a story on Yahoo News this week, American taxpayers own close to 200,000 vacant homes. And over the next year, they will spend more than $40 million to mow lawns on these properties. In fact, taxpayers also foot the bills to paint walls, fix cabinets, plant flowers, and a lot more. And these expenses last year exceeded $500 million.
Yeah, that we're picking up the tab for the banks.
So the banks are using our taxpayer bailout money to fix up the properties they own. They got caught in robo-signing scandals, and they drag their feet in foreclosures. And it seems like the taxpayers are actually funding the banks and making it possible for the banks to continue abusing the system.
Well, if it sounds like it's a vicious cycle, Karen, it is. Yet every legislator basically is scared to death for some reason in Florida to demand more and more from the banking industry. And I got to tell you, I think that is really sad. Now, I got to tell you, though, I really appreciate what Randy did last week, actually saying he does, in fact, demand more from the banks and wants more from the banks. Just hope that he's going to get some cooperation should he get to Tallahassee. But real interesting article in the Sun Sentinel about all of this. Cities across the U.S. are starting to fight back, and in fact, the city of Boynton Beach here in Florida is now citing banks for code violations even before the bank gets title to the unit. And generally, when properties fall into disrepair, a municipality can issue violations against the property, which, if it's not corrected, it can result in monetary liens, as we know, against the property.
Yeah, you know, these banks, they routinely ask to bargain down the fine so they can sell the property with a clear title. And, you know, cities normally agree, so I don't know if this is really going to help that much, Eric.
Well, give them, I ain't listened. Anybody who at least demands a little more from the bank, I'm on their side. But let's look at how New York and New Jersey deal with the foreclosure crisis.
Oh,
and again,
geez.
There it's not even as bad in Florida, but look what these states did. In 2010, Jersey became the first state to require lenders to correct code violations on vacant properties at any time during the foreclosure crisis. So once that bank files the complaint, that's it. They're on the hook to correct any violations that property has. And a few months later, New York actually followed Jersey, and now there the lenders have to maintain all the vacant properties in the time period between winning a foreclosure judgment and taking title at the auction. You would think these things make sense. You know, don't let the properties fall into disrepair. Make the banks upkeep them.
Right.
You'd certainly like to see that happen in Florida, but it simply isn't happening.
But that Sun Sentinel article goes on to say Florida, a pro-business state with a powerful banking lobby, is unlikely to adopt similar rules.
I agree. It's not going to happen. How about we go to Howard in Hollywood? How are you, Howard?
Oh, wonderful. Fortunately, I'm up here in New York, but I'm a Hollywood resident of an HOA, POA, Property Owners Association.
Sure, uh-huh.
And the question is, right now in arbitration with a mediator, and I wanted to find out if you have any comments as far as discovery, how to bring in other property owners to testify. Couldn't find anything really in the arbitration rules.
The arbitration rules?
Expert testimony. You have any ideas?
Yeah. Let's talk about that for a second. If this isn't a condo, this is an HOA.
Yes.
Okay. If you're an HOA, the question is really, what are you doing in arbitration? What type of case is it about?
It's illegal construction. Homeowners doing submitting erroneous building permits.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of strange that type of a case winds up in arbitration.
Let me ask you something, Howard. Are you guys going to mediation anytime soon?
Yes, it's scheduled for next month.
Yeah. Well, you know, you're not actually in an adversarial process right now like arbitration is for condo owners. You guys are simply going to a pre-suit mediation that where a third party is going to try and get both sides to, you know, put aside their differences and try to work out a settlement when they both make arguments to him. This is not a proceeding where you're going to be able to prove anything and some third party is going to actually rule on whether or not you're right. This third party is just there to bring you two together to see if you can resolve your differences before you go to court. The opportunity for you guys to, you know, prove that you're right would be if you didn't settle at mediation and then go to court and then hire expert witnesses and engage in the discovery process.
Exactly. Good point, Scott. I wasn't getting where Howard was going on that, but that's exactly right. Mediation is designed to prevent you from spending all that money on that expert witness that you seem eager to spend the money on. The idea is, again, settle it at mediation before a case winds up in court. You'll have plenty of time to hire all the experts you want and do all the discovery you want, but that's if the mediation breaks down. And on that note, Howard, we got to take our first break. Taking your calls, 877-850-8585, 877-850-8585. We will be back right after this.
Back to Condo Craze and HOAs here on 850 WFTL. Big Talk 850 on this rainy Sunday afternoon. I'm Karen Curtis with attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro from Glazer & Associates. We want to hear from you. Give us a call at 877-850-8585, 877-850-8585. And by the way, if you have a product or service that would be beneficial to our listeners and want to be a guest on the show, attend our monthly seminars where you meet hundreds of different associations, be listed on the show's website, have a commercial spot during each week's show, you can become a sponsor of the show. Just visit the show's website at condocrazeandhoas.com and send us a quick email.
All right. How about we take our next caller? It's Attell from Boynton Beach.
Hi.
Hey, how are you?
I just wanted to ask a question. Our board has decided that we are to use only transponders to enter our community, and they are going to recall cards that were issued by the builder. In other words, you would buy a transponder, and then you would have a card for a second car if you didn't wish to buy another transponder. Is that legal?
Yeah,
Can they take...
Go ahead. Yeah, can the board do that? Yeah, I'd say the board certainly can. They can certainly agree by board vote to switch the type of system that's being used. I don't think that would be classified
no,
as any...
No, they're not switching system. They're just taking away the cards. They do not want to have people who have attendance taking care of them to be able to come in with the card.
Okay, so they'd rather you have a transponder system. The bottom line is they're switching from a card system, basically, to a transponder system?
Actually not, no. They're not switching any system. They're just not allowing us to use the cards after August 1st.
Okay. All right, whatever it is, they're doing it for, like, a reasonable security measure? At least in
we have cameras, we have guards.
Yeah, but the board, I guess, would have wide latitude when it comes to deciding what type of security measure is best for your community. So, like it or not, again, I think that that's a board decision. It would be protected by the Florida Business Judgment Rule, and it's something the board certainly has the inherent authority to do, like it or not. And on that note, why don't we go to Ralph in West Palm Beach? How are you, Ralph?
Hi. Question on HOAs. When it comes to changing documents, generally speaking, unless you have a direct question back to me, do HOAs generally have the right to change documents, giving them the right to, let's say, paint private property and taking away that right that was in the initial documents, changing it and saying that the HOA will paint that property and they will maintain it, and at the same time, there is no insurance provided between the HOA and the contractor.
Yes.
So if the contractor does any damage,
right,
then the homeowner becomes responsible, and they're saying, well, use your own home insurance,
right,
which is very silly because the home insurance will then cancel out or won't cover it. How did they get away with that?
Well, a lot of times associations get tired, homeowner associations get tired of knocking on the doors of all their residents or sending warning letters to the residents saying you have to paint your house. It's in disrepair. There's a lot of mold and mildew on it. And a lot of times the unit owners may not listen, and instead of getting into an altercation with so many of your unit owners and sending out letters and demands and perhaps lawsuits requiring everybody to paint their own home, associations have, by unit owner vote, though, that's the important thing, Ralph, if the unit
right.
owners vote to amend
yes,
their documents. Right.
They got the vote.
Then there you go. A lot of times they shift that burden over to the association itself. The association winds up signing a contract with a contractor to paint all the homes in the community at one time. Everybody, in effect, could wind up saving a lot of money as a result.
Right, but don't mind if I interrupt because
no,
you've got to move fast. But the insurance,
right.
The HOA should be carrying insurance not only for common property, but now pieces of private property have become under their domain.
Well, no,
don't they have to carry insurance, and why does the insurance, if any damage is done by the contractor or negligence by board members, that, in fact, then the homeowner becomes required to provide the insurance?
Well, I think more importantly than that, I guess the association has whatever insurance it has, but the important
right.
thing to me is if you're going to hire a contractor, if the association is going to hire a contractor to do the painting, that contractor
right.
is insured. As long as the contractor has a policy out there and names the association as an additional insured, I think everybody's okay. That's really
all I'm
concerned about.
I may call your number and speak directly because it's a little more involved. It doesn't name the homeowners in general, without naming names.
Right. I think since the association,
500 homeowners.
Yeah, but since the association is the one that's signing the contract, then I think probably all that would be necessary is if the HOA would be listed as an additional insured. I think the association would be fine. All right, but
okay.
Ralph, you want to give us a call in the office? 855,
yes.
The number 4, Condo Craze. Again, 855, the number 4, Condo Craze. All right,
can I just say that occurred and the vendor refused to correct the damage they did?
Then you don't. And a contract's been signed?
Yes. And what happens is they, in the process of working, they refuse to fix it, and then I'll call your office directly.
All right, no problem, Ralph. Thanks for the, well, it seems like they may need an attorney for a breach of contract action against that painter, right? All right. Before we went to the break, we were actually talking about the big bad banks, and let's look quickly at what the city of Palm Bay, Florida, did for a moment in actually dealing with the banks. They passed a local ordinance that said their code enforcement liens can't get wiped out by the bank's foreclosure, even if the lien was filed after the bank gave their mortgage. That's a pretty serious statement that that city is trying to make. And the problem is that Wells Fargo Bank winds up foreclosing on a house that had one of these code enforcement liens on it. And the trial court ruled, though, that the lien was wiped out despite Palm Bay's laws that say it's not wiped out. And the Fifth District Court of Appeal actually agreed. But now the case has actually gone up to the Florida Supreme Court, and they have agreed to hear the case. And I got to tell you, I don't think that the city is going to win. But if somehow, some way, that law gets upheld by the Florida Supreme Court, what Palm Bay did, you can absolutely look for every municipality in Florida to pass that same exact law. No two ways about it.
Yeah, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that they probably won't upheld it based on, you know, that Cone case you're always talking about, Eric. The Florida Supreme Court will probably strike down Palm Bay's ordinance, and the banks will be victorious yet again.
I agree. I think there's a whole host of constitutional problems if the and that's exactly why the 5th DCA and the trial court ruled that despite the law, it's simply not going to happen. If the bank's mortgage was recorded first, they get to wipe out that code enforcement lien. Blaine from Palm City, we see you on hold. Taking your calls at 877-850-8585, 877-850-8585. We'll be back right after this.
Welcome back to the second half hour of Condo Craze and HOAs here on Big Talk 850. I'm Karen Curtis, and I'm here again with attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro from Glazer & Associates. We are taking your phone calls at 877-850-8585. That's 877-850-8585. And let's go to Blaine in Palm City, who's been holding patiently. Hi, Blaine.
Hello. Eric.
How are you, Blaine?
I'm a recent graduate of your February expo courts in Palm Beach. Great
I
show.
How are you, Blaine? Thanks for showing up. What'd you think about it?
Well, I don't know where you get all that energy for 4 hours.
Was it 4 hours? That one went that long, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I belong to a community, HOA, sometimes articles of incorporation for other times. Okay. Now, under 720, which I don't have full copies of, when you have a subcontractor performing work on common properties, is there any requirement in 720 that they be licensed and insured, or is that strictly discretionary?
I don't think you'd find anything specific in the statute that says if the associations are going to hire a company to do work, that that company has to be licensed and insured. Good common sense and good business practice of the association is it makes it obvious that the person that's hired to do the work is licensed and insured. And if the work actually requires a permit to be pulled from the local municipality, that contractor is not going to be able to get that permit unless they can show that they're licensed and insured.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's the way I kind of interpreted. We operate under our Articles of Incorporation, which were drafted up in 1972, and also under 720 when either one or the other is convenient.
All right, I got it. Well, even though your documents were put in place in 72 before the HOA statutes actually came into effect 20 years later, you're still, in fact, regulated probably by 720 in most respects.
Okay? Well, yeah, we have never officially adopted and recognized 720.
Right. Well,
That's where we stand.
I got
okay,
you.
Thank you for clarification on that contractor requirement.
No problem. Thank you for the call, Blaine. All right, taking your calls, 877-850-8585, 877-850-8585. All right, before we went to our last break, we were talking about Palm Bay's new ordinance, which basically says that code enforcement liens that they put on properties are even superior to the bank's mortgages, and when the banks foreclose, it does not wipe out those liens. But again, so far, Palm Bay has been unsuccessful in court, and the judges have held, including the Fifth District, that I'm sorry, that would be probably unconstitutional, and the bank's foreclosure is in fact superior to those code enforcement liens. But I guess at this point, even if the banks lose, remember what happened recently when the developers lost in court, and the court said that the developers didn't have to had to give those HOA warranties at the Fifth District. Well, the Florida legislature, remember, came to the developers' rescue, and they passed a law that did just the opposite and bailed out the developers and said, no, despite what the courts say, developers don't have to give a warranty. So, again, if somehow, some way, the Supreme Court ruled in favor of the city of Palm Bay, there's no doubt in my mind whatsoever that the Florida legislature would immediately pass another statute that says the code enforcement liens of the municipalities have no priority as to any of the liens recorded after the bank's mortgage. Why? Because the banks have lots of friends in Tallahassee, and the homeowners have none. So, on that note, I don't think the banks have anything to worry about, quite frankly, whichever way the Florida Supreme Court rules. But how about this crazy case at Pasco County, where despite the fact that the HOA didn't even foreclose and own a home, the HOA changed the locks on the home, and they persuaded a judge to evict the renter and appoint a receiver to manage the property. And then the HOA rented out the property to someone that they wanted of their own choosing. Yeah, pretty amazing. The locks were changed on the door. This, again, even though the HOA did not even own the property. And, of course, this was over the objections of the actual unit owner. And this owner said this all stems from missing one payment to the HOA when her mother died.
Well, wow.
Eric, I'm just shocked that an HOA would rent out a unit or a home that it didn't own. I mean, I never hear about this. Oh, wait, I got like five cases that deal with this. Apparently, though, this isn't the first time that this association has been accused of wrongdoing. In one situation, a prospective buyer was told 2 days before the closing that he had to pay $14,000 in fees for cosmetic work that was done to the unit, or the association would quash the sale. The buyer then walked away from the purchase.
Yeah. Of course, $14,000. Just to be clear, though, there are times when the condo or HOA can demand that the tenant pay the rent to the association, right?
Yeah, absolutely. The association can make those demands. The law does provide, again, that if an owner owes the association money, the association can make that written demand on the tenant to that owner, basically saying that until further notice, you have to pay your rent to the association, and if the tenant refuses, the association can then file an eviction action against the tenant. The important thing to know here is, though, the statute requires a very, very specific form letter to be sent, and if the association doesn't use the right letter, their claim can absolutely be ignored, rejected, and they're not going to be able to recover on it.
Yeah, but there's a big, big difference here, and the difference is that this association, before they did anything, changed the locks on the doors without getting a court order. You know, that should have gotten the association in trouble and hit up for some cash right there.
Yeah.
Then, though, even though the statute nowhere gives the association the right to have the home rented to whomever it wants prior to the association actually, you know, foreclosing on it and taking title of the place, it apparently, you know, they got, you know, a couple of lawyers to go in there and make some sort of argument that allowed them, the court, to do all this nonsense that was clearly against the law.
Not sure how the court actually wound up ruling in this regard, you know, how it actually happened. But, yes.
Why don't we take a road trip up to Pasco and ask some people?
I'll be going there soon anyway, as a matter of fact. But we tell boards for condos and HOAs, you know, to not to change the locks right away until they actually actually have ownership of the property. Again, you have to own it first. You don't change anything before you actually have title to the unit. And I'm guessing, quite frankly, that that unit owner has a real good shot of winning on appeal, and we will certainly keep everybody advised of any future developments on the case. Why don't we do this? Why don't we head into our final break of the hour, taking your calls, like Karen said, on this rainy Sunday, 877-850-8585. Again, 877-850-8585, and we will be back right after this.
final segment of Condo Craze and HOAs here on Big Talk 850. I'm Karen Curtis with attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro from Glazer and Associates. We are taking your phone calls at 877-850-8585. That's 877-850-8585. And let's go to Kim from Lake Worth.
How are you, Kim?
Hey, good afternoon. My name's Kim. How are you doing?
How are you?
Good. That's Eric?
Yes, sir.
Hey, Eric. I was just driving up to this Publix in the car, and it's raining so hard. And I was listening to your program, and it prompted me to give you a quick call.
Sure. How can we help you?
Okay. I've got a question about I put an offer in on a house and put a $5,000 deposit down. And then the bank refused the mortgage. He said that there was a problem with the house. And then I found out, a little bit like your last part on the show, that there was some issues with the Homeowners Association, that some payments hadn't been made. But now I'm in a situation where, well, I'm not sure what situation I'm in.
So,
because I've put a deposit down, and I can't get the mortgage, and because of the Homeowners Association.
Well, the question is, why couldn't you get the mortgage? Not just because that the condo or HOA assessments are overdue. That's normally something that gets taken care of at the closing. You know, is there another reason why the financing couldn't go through?
No, they came back with two issues with the house. And I've got a query the next week. I only had the letter yesterday. So it was nothing to do with my my credit rating or score. There were some issues with the owner, something with the house. One was the homeowners, and I didn't understand the other term they mentioned.
Right. Don't know. We'd have to actually see the rejection letter, but hopefully when you sign this contract to purchase your home, it was had a contingency clause in there that was contingent on you getting financing. Because if it does not contain a contingency clause in there, you could be stuck having to buy that house. So, you know, a lot of times people get involved in real estate deals and they don't think it's necessary, quite frankly, to hire the services of an attorney to look over the contract. Yeah, and you rely on the other side. Then, you know, they'll tell you, yeah, my attorney will take a look at the contract. They'll draft it. Don't worry about it. You know, and for your sake, I'm just hoping that there's a mortgage contingency clause, which says that if you
can't get the mortgage,
go ahead.
I'm fortunate that I can buy the house for cash.
Gotcha.
So the mortgage was just a convenient way of getting the funds quickly, but now I've rearranged things. I can buy it for cash.
Right.
But I'm just concerned about, can I actually buy the house?
Understood. Well, don't know. Would love to see what that rejection letter says. If you want to give us a call off the air, and maybe we can find out more details and help you out further, give us a call at 855-4-CONDO-CRAZE. Again, 855-4-CONDO-CRAZE. Thanks for calling, Kim. All right, still taking your calls with a few minutes left. 877-850-8585. Again, 877-850-8585. All right, you know, I love it when appellate courts write opinions that truly lash out. They don't hold back. And let me tell everybody about a case that the Third District Court of Appeal decided upon. And the Third District Court of Appeal actually handles appeals of cases from Dade and Monroe counties. And a great decision actually came out this week. And it involves a foreclosure of two units in Turnberry in Aventura by Ocean Bank.
Yeah. The case was really nothing more than a garden variety foreclosure. The owner of the two units was not paying the bank. And then the bank foreclosed on the units. After the unit owner lost the foreclosure cases, but before the sale happened, the owner opened up a limited liability company and transferred the unit to that LLC. Then he appealed the foreclosure judgment.
Yeah, like what else is new? You know, lots of games, lots of shenanigans by a lot of mortgagors trying to avoid their property from being taken away. Now, these opinions of our appellate courts come out each Wednesday, and if the defendant or his lawyers read this opinion, they knew that they were in trouble early on. Because the opinion states actually in the very first paragraph, and I quote, because of the appellant's ill-conceived effort to circumvent or otherwise obstruct the judicial process by transferring the condominium units to limited liability companies under his control after the final judgments were entered but before filing his notices of appeal, we dismiss each of the appeals for lack of standing. That should have been a hint right there that he, when the court refers to your appeal in that kind of language, you kind of know you're in trouble in the very first paragraph.
Well, the court also made it clear that at no time during the case did the defendant dispute the fact that the loans were made or that the allegations of nonpayment were false.
Right. You didn't see anything in his appeal saying, wait a minute, they miscalculated my payments. He didn't dispute anything. All he did was transfer the properties after he had already lost the case. And here's where the attack on the lawyers really come in, because the opinion concludes by saying, we decline to permit the defendant to turn the mortgage lender's lawful exercise of its remedies into a game of keep away, where boilerplate and sweeping requests for production of records, fact-free affirmative defenses, and dilatory tactics are employed to impede the lender. The defendant invested in the condominium units at an inauspicious time and has not weathered the foreclosure storm.
Let me tell you, that should scare a lot of lawyers out there.
That's true. Right? I agree. No two ways about it.
We get confronted with things like this all the time. And, you know, I'm glad that especially that it's the third and the fourth that are coming up with decisions like this.
Right,
that
exactly.
Our districts are really taking notice of it.
I agree.
Because this court certainly didn't hold back on how it felt.
No, no two ways about it. And certainly you'd like to see, hey, the cases that deserve to get final judgments, you know, we complained about the banks not moving forward to get final judgments. Here a bank did, and the defendant was playing games to kind of prevent it. So, yeah, definitely 100% good decision by the third DCA. All right, how about we answer an email in the few minutes we have left? We're still taking your calls. 877-850-8585. Again, 877-850-8585.
Sandra?
Yes, Sandra.
From Fort Lauderdale asks, our association has a rule stating that no owner or resident may conduct business out of his or her unit. That constitutes doing business in, or what constitutes doing business in the unit? Is foot traffic in and out of the unit considered doing business in the unit? If there is no foot traffic in and out of the unit, then would this be considered as not doing business out of the unit?
Yeah, well, say that again, Karen.
Yeah. Right. Well, that's how the email came in. But Sandra, let's talk about that for a moment. In an arbitration case decided about 2 years ago, the arbitrator held that in order for your home office to be disallowed, there needs to be things like inventory there, there needs to be merchandise, or physical interaction with customers. And, you know, unless you have these actual characteristics taking place there, you can 100% continue to operate your home office without worry that the association can shut you down. Of course, you know, I think all of us here do work at night. Karen, you probably write for the news in the morning.
Sure.
Sometimes at night. Do you work at night? I do most of my legal work, quite frankly.
We're working.
Hey, certainly don't do it during the day.
Yeah, you're not kidding. So, you know, and my HOA certainly can't do anything about that. But, yeah, as long as you're not creating, you know, a type of business that where customers are coming to see you,
you're taking
up parking
spots. Yeah, I had a friend
who
was doing hair in her.
That's a problem.
And she had, you know, dyes and some products in her house, and she had people coming in and out with their hair being done.
Yeah, and that normally results in a problem for that unit owner.
Okay, certainly makes sense. And more people are starting to work from home. And just because you use your computer in your home office shouldn't mean that you are violating some condo or HOA law that can get you in trouble,
exactly.
Right? Just because you're using the computer?
Yeah, of course not. Again, unless the people that are coming to visit you wind up taking up parking spots, creating, you know, traffic in your community, no, feel free to continue to work in your home, and your association can't do much about it. All right, how about we take another email from Sam? Sam wants to know, we had money left over from a special assessment, and the board and the management won't return it to us condo owners. Is it not the law that the overassessment has to be returned to us?
Yeah, we've actually gotten this question a number of times from callers. So let's just make it clear to everybody right here. Not necessarily, Sam. Here is exactly what the statute says. The funds collected pursuant to a special assessment shall be used only for the specific purposes or purposes set forth in such notice. However, upon completion of such specific purpose or purposes, any excess funds will be considered common surplus and may, not should or must, may, at the discretion of the board, either be returned to the unit owners or applied as a credit toward future assessments.
Right. So, again, that's the law on that topic. We get questioned about it all the time, but they don't necessarily, again, have to return it to you, Sam. I hope that answers your question. Let's talk quickly a little bit about what we'll talk about next week. We're coming up on July 4th, and What does that do? That always brings out, you know, barbecues, baseball, swimming pools and stuff, and of course lawsuits regarding flying the flag in your condo and HOA.
No.
Yeah, so those happen absolutely every single year. As a matter of fact, that'll be the topic of tomorrow's blog at, again, hoa-condoblog.com.
You know, Eric, I can't leave the house without getting bombarded by listeners asking, when are we going to do another dog show?
We got the dog show coming up, too. Lots and lots and lots to update everybody on about a recent decision by the 4th DCA on the emotional support animal issue. We have a case that's actually tied up in federal court that we may talk about next week. So between the flags and emotional support animals,
yeah.
Next week looks to be exciting week. A lot to talk about. So tune in same time, same place next week. We'll take any calls again, 877-850-8585. And everybody, we will see you again next week. Have a great week.
All right.